Our agenda is here. Today on the agenda is a short update from Vikash on Google Summer of Code. We should also review the transition announcement or the transition requirements just so all of the authors and editors are on the same page on the transition call. And then get into testing of API options, the test API options, and the manifest lookout updates, and the freeze date for the test suite. Any other updates or changes to the agenda for today? Okay, I'm scribing today. Vikash, would you mind giving us an update on your progress?
Yeah, sure. good evening, everyone.
Hi.
So this week was the continuation of the LinkedIn app. I have managed to keep it working, but right now I'm not able to show anything. So initially, first of all, I sent two emails last week, and one email today, and one I sent an email before as well. Because in the last conference we discussed that some of the people will send me their JSON to test data. Hello?
Yep, we hear you.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I haven't got any one of that. I also reminded it before and today as well. So I, in fact, need that data because my the JSON coming from my LinkedIn data, my LinkedIn profile is not quite exhausted. Apart from that, there are quite a few fields which I'm not able to think what it should be linked to in the JSON-LD, like interest, position, skill, and there are other things as well. So these are the two major issues. Also, in the middle of the week when I had problem, after sending an email, I pinged on the IRC as well, and Dave had responded me, and we had a good discussion on where I was thinking in a wrong way. And where I was like, in the case of companies, so I was keeping that ID to schema.org organization, and we had the discussion what it should be and what it should not be. So that's the major thing. So and also data and LD in JSON LD should look like. So we had a discussion on that, and it gave me a clear idea on those terms.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, you still need LinkedIn documents from folks. What's the easiest way to submit that to you? Do we just go to your application and log in, and then the JSON will be dumped in there?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a link to the application?
No, because it's
Run it locally, don't you?
Yeah.
That might be the reason that you haven't had a lot of people giving you documents, because it takes a bit to set that up.
Yeah, I understand.
I can send you mine, and hopefully mine's pretty well filled out. So hopefully you would be able to just use that. And then I think you should probably not expect to really get documents from anyone else, just because it's hard to, set the site up and run it in the way that it's currently configured. After the call, please remind me to send you the JSON for my profile, and just bug me until I send it to you, because that's holding you up from making progress, and that's not good.
Yeah. Okay. Apart from that, I think this should be the last week in terms of my finalization of work. After that, I can move on to it's my personal feeling that I can move to documentation or the brownie task or the other things, on improvising other things or making things more programmatically rather than hard coding stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think this will be the last week where I'll be meeting all my deadlines in terms of GSOC specifically.
Okay. How many weeks are left in the program for you, Vikash?
I think around about 3 to 4.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I don't quite know exactly how long, how many weeks left either. So,
I think so. I really wanted to discuss this as well. So, as per the proposal I had, LinkedIn task was the last final coding task, after which was the documentation. But as I think I'll be finishing wrapping up by the end of this week. So, but I wanted to continue, so we'll keep on improvising things and working upon a lot of stuff.
Okay, but what specifically would you be working on?
I think we'll take that on email so that a lot of people can give their suggestions where I still lack. One of the things that I feel I still lack is writing good schema. I think I need to improve on that because that's one of my weak points still.
Okay, that sounds good. So the plan then is you're going to try and finish up a decent chunk of the LinkedIn app this week, and then you're going to go back around to the schema. Are you talking about the LinkedIn schema or the schema.org JSON LD context?
JSON LD context.
Okay.
I think I need to make that more into my foundations and get my concepts get a more clearer picture of the concepts. That's what I see.
Okay. Well, then probably your next step then is going to be to write a program to transform the schema.org data to a JSON LD context, because that's really what this group needs. And that will also give you the type of experience on creating a really big, schema. Hopefully the product from that, what you'll produce from that, is going to be something that everyone using schema.org will be able to use in their JSON LD applications.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Anything else, Vikash, before we move on?
Any questions so far that the community feels that that I should keep in mind, or anything else, suggestions from the community is what I'm expecting here.
Okay, so I think my concern with the LinkedIn app right now is that it's not very generalized. So that's a concern. The other concern is the schema.org stuff. So if we get a schema.org, if you're going to work on a schema.org JSON LD context and finalize that, then that would be good. I think that would be very helpful. And then whatever remaining time you have left, making it more generalized, making the LinkedIn app more generalized, or making the creator, the creator tool more generalized, that would be good. So basically, making the tools that you've built more generalized so that they're easier to add to, and then the schema.org JSON LD context. If you focus on those things, then that would be good.
I'd like to mention that in my last discussion with Dave, he also accepted somehow that creating a more generic tool for LinkedIn application is quite cumbersome because of the JSON structure. So it was then we thought, he also thought it would be good if it's hard coded, because coming up with a more generic tool is quite cumbersome, and I feel the same, very same.
Okay. So then maybe generalizing the creator tool, not the LinkedIn tool, but the creator tool.
Yeah. So one thing I think the scheme. The context which can be generated from a generic scraper can be directly used in the creator tool as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. So maybe the plan is then work on the schema, translating the schema.org context, and then work on generalizing the creator tool.
I guess
2 weeks for each one of those. How are you going to write the translation for the schema.org context?
One of the ways can be I could scrape these schema.org/person or any of the web pages, get the title, and if it's text, it's cool. Otherwise, map it to the current ID and set it as type and ID.
I guess what I was asking is, what programming language are you going to write it in?
Most probably Python. Else, Node.js.
Okay, you might be able to just write it in the browser, meaning JavaScript in the browser. You might be able to fetch the document. There's a library called Green Turtle, which will extract the RDFA from a document, and you'll have the entire basically schema.org thing at that point, and then converting that to JSON-LD might be easier. We'll want to talk about that. So let's talk about that and pick an approach that is going to be easier for other people to use. The problem with Node.js and Python is that people can't improve upon it in the browser, and if they can't do that, then probably no one's going to build on top of the tool. It'll be kind of a one-off tool. So we want to make sure that we can try and run it in the browser if at all possible.
Do we know if the schema.org serve course headers?
I don't know, but if it doesn't, we can just pull the document onto our website and
right.
then pull it from our website.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Don't worry about it. It's just a technical issue with the browsers. The problem is the JavaScript might not be able to process the schema.org document because it's hosted on schema.org, and if they don't serve the document in a way that the JavaScript code can get access to it, meaning it doesn't have what's called CORS headers, C-O-R-S, if it doesn't have those headers, then the JavaScript program running in the browser won't be able to fetch it. So if that's the case, we will just pull the document from their site and put it on the JSON-LD website, and then you can write JavaScript code to process it on the JSON-LD website.
Cool, makes sense. So recently I was playing with Nginx, and then I was actually I actually got to know why cross-origin is a problem. So that makes sense. If that has a cross-origin issue, it can handle it in a different way.
And Marcus just said in IRC that they don't have CORS enabled, which is unfortunate. We'll have to host the document on JSON-LD. It's not a big deal. We'll just do that. That's good.
So, summing up, it's like by this week, if things go good, I'll finish off with the deadlines, and we can start with a good gesture, and we can have a lot of running programs, and then I can move to the creator tool, finalizing everything.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. That's the plan then. Thank you, Vikash. Let's go ahead and move on to the candidate rec transition requirements and discuss that very quickly. JSON-LD candidate rec. So this is a transition discussion for the candidate rec documents. The data to back up to support the transition to candidate rec is here. The major thing we need to discuss is the list of changes, documentation of changes. So we need to discuss this right here. Primarily, we need to make sure that all of the changes that I've marked as non-substantive bug fix and editorial are in fact those. If we find that there's some kind of nasty issue with a substantive change, then that kind of throws a wrench in the whole works. Some of these were borderline, and I just need to be reminded how these are non-substantive bug fixes and not actually substantive changes to the document. So as we're reading through these, if something has non-substantive bug fix marked beside it, and someone thinks that it's actually a substantive fix, that means that candidate rec is off. So let's be aware of that as we're reading through. So I'm at the JSON-LD 1.0 changes right now, going to the 11th April 2013 first last call working draft. The first item allowed keyword aliases to be defined using expanded term definitions. We said that that was a non-substantive bug fix. I don't quite remember what that had to do with. So I think it meant that we allow keyword aliases to be specified in the context, in an expanded term definition, it was just an oversight before. We thought that we had it in there, and it wasn't in there, and it seems like something obvious that should be allowed. Is that correct?
That's my memory of it.
Okay.
There was no – I'm pretty sure all the implementations were doing it already, and we just didn't make sure to say that you could do it in the spec. Since the shortened version is sort of like syntactic sugar, so we sort of meant for the longer version to definitely work.
Okay. All right. Second item is editorial, mentioning profile URIs in the sections describing the various document forms. Third item is supporting relative IRIs in base. We had always meant to support relative IRIs, I think. It was just not in there. And a third one or fourth one is editorial, clarifying how the profile media type parameter is used in content negotiation. The fifth and sixth ones are updates to the grammar to disallow blank notes as data types, which it just doesn't really make sense to do that, and we just didn't really have that in the grammar. No one really wanted to use that. We haven't gotten any comments in saying that people want to use that. It was just an oversight. Update grammar to allow blank note identifiers as a value of vocab. That I don't understand, or I don't remember the reasoning behind that one. Marcus, this is in the grammar.
That's basically, if you want to automatically map all properties to blank note identifiers, you can use add vocab and just set that to the blank node identifier, which is then used as a prefix.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure almost everywhere we had allowed blank node identifiers in the implementations, because we just distinguish something as an absolute IRI or blank node identifier in the same way by looking for a colon. And I just think we weren't clear in the spec that you could do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. This next one was aligning the JSON-LD data model to the RDF data model. There were a lot of really big changes to the spec, but none of them affected implementations or the syntax. It was all in the data model, so that was marked as purely editorial. That was really the biggest change that we made since the first last call to the JSON-LD 1.0 spec. Support processing of documents with a JSON media type. I think in that case we just didn't want to. We thought that people were going to end up serving it with an incorrect MIME type or a JSON MIME type, and we wanted to make sure that people weren't prevented from using those types of documents by the spec. So it's loosening the restrictions a bit, but it's not really a substantive change because it's just, you know, we're just processing another media type. It doesn't really, and it's processing as another media type that people are more apt to publish the context in if they don't know the details of the spec. So it's not really something that would raise an issue. And no one's commented on the change since then. So, and then the last two are editorial. Okay, so that's the JSON-LD 1.0 changes. Let's see, JSON-LD 1.0 API changes. Let's see, changes since the 11th April working draft. And these, it doesn't matter if they're substantive. So we basically hit a point where we had a substantive change, which was the DOM futures / promises usage. And because of that, that just kicked us into a second last call. And so this section, just the changes since the first call working draft, outlines all of the changes that we made. So two non-substantive ones, processing of terms that are redefined to themselves without racing. So there's a bug fix, the first item, and the second one is to raise an invalid IRI mapping error if relative URLs are used in term definitions. We had meant to do that, or it was clear that that's an error. We just hadn't put that in the spec. And then third item, DOM futures, that triggered the second last call. And then everything after that, since we were going in the second last call, we decided to fix a number of other things, like supporting a list of lists, when serializing REF as JSON LD, supporting relative URIs in base. Although here,
what?
Supporting relative URIs in base is marked as a substantive change. And if it's a substantive change here, the question is, why is it not a substantive change in the JSON LD 1.0 spec? And the reasoning I'm using is that it required a change to the algorithms to support that. However, it did not really require a change to the syntax in any way other than saying that they're supported. So that's why in the API it's a substantive, because it changed the algorithms in the 1.0 spec. It wasn't substantive because we had wanted to support it anyway. Does that line of argumentation work for folks?
It does, but it sounds a bit strange. I mean, even in JSON-LD, in the syntax spec, we are not actually defining a syntax. It's just JSON, but the grammar changed, and that's, I don't know if that's substantive or not, but...
Well,
looks a bit weird to be substantive in one spec and not in the other.
Right. So, I mean, are we marking this as a substantive change or a non-substantive change in the API changes? The way that I was looking at it is people have not really been that... The grammar is the formal definition of the language, and people have not really commented on it that much at all because they don't seem to be that interested in the formal definition of the language. It's good if you really want to be pedantic about the language, but that it would affect your understanding of JSON-LD to the point that it would invalidate your review comments. It doesn't go that far, if that makes sense.
The support for base, it did align the feature with the similar features in XML and HTML, right?
Yeah.
So.
In Turtle.
Yeah, right. So following those, it seems to be sort of a fix or a bug fix, given that we always intended this to behave as expected in general.
Yeah, I think we should be careful with saying that things are substantial changes if they're not, if people don't comment on them. I don't think that's a strong argument. I think Nicholas's argument is better.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to say that is a... one second.
You know, like, yeah, we had to change the algorithm, but that's just because... we sort of intended this thing to work the same way as everything else,
okay.
And we overlooked it.
Okay, so that's a non-substantive bug fix. Next item up, remove default value of JSON-LD options base member. Substantive or non-substantive bug fix? What was the default? Does anyone remember what the default value of the base member was?
I think it was set to the document's base, and so every IRI was automatically compacted to a relative IRI.
Mm.
So the result was a substantive change, I think.
Okay. So we changed it to just be nothing, is that right? Or
yeah.
Did we change it to be the document? Okay. Okay. And then the last one, support of relative URLs in base and documents that do not have a base value. And again, this is this kind of conflict with the previous thing where we said the change to base, addition of relative URLs in base was non-substantive. So we could say this is a non-substantive bug fix. Is that right?
We could delete the first part because we already have like an item for that, but supporting documents that do not have a base value, I think that was at base null, and I think that's still a featured risk. So we could say that's a substantive
right.
change.
Yeah. Okay, so support documents that do not have a base value, I'm saying that's substantive. Okay. Okay, and so the next group of issues is more tricky. We have to make sure that these are non-substantive changes. They're all marked as non-substantive bug fix or editorial. First one, ensure determinism of the deserialized JSON LDA to RDF algorithm by specifying the processing order. Does anyone remember the actual change that we made to do that? Also, I'm getting a lot of echo from someone, whoever has their audio on their speakers.
I think somewhere in the algorithm we forgot to sort the properties before processing them. So the keys are unordered in a JSON object, and we have to sort them before we assign blank nodes, for example.
Okay. All right. Next one, change default value of use native types flag in the algorithm to false. Feedback from Sandro, but it's just changing one of the values, the default values. It's not a big design change.
We decided that by default we don't want to lose information, so we considered it a bug fix that the default behavior was information loss.
Okay. Clarifying the identifier map and counter used by generate blank node identifier. Reset before running flattening and deserialization. That's pretty clearly, I think, a bug fix. Raise an error if a blank node is used as a data type, bug fix. Clarifying that blank node identifiers are supported as a value of vocab, bug fix. When generating RDF, excluding triples containing blank node predicate unless producing generalized RDF is set. That is a bug fix. Producing something that is not RDF conformant by default is a bug based on all the discussions we've been having over the past multiple months. Updating reference to DOM promises, editorial, fixing bug in serialized RDF to JSON LD algorithm to handle list correctly, I think is clearly a bug fix. Support processing of documents with plus JSON media type, bug fix, we wanted to support that. Or we think that people are going to make that mistake and we want to support it and it's not a big change to any of the algorithms. Use the load document callback to retrieve remote context. Again, this is a bug fix. Not doing this prevented previous use cases that we thought we supported. and finally allow context to be passed into the API directly. Again, a bug fix, because we were afraid that developers might put the wrong thing in there. Does anyone disagree that any of these are bug fixes, or some of them should be substantive that are not marked as substantive? Okay, no disagreement. We're moving on. So Marcus, Greg, that's more or less, usually when we go through these transition calls, that's where a lot of the focus is placed, is on whether or not we've, followed the letter of the law as far as the W3C process is concerned. Still getting a lot of echo for someone. Documentation of changes we'll spend a lot of time on. The evidence of wide review. I was really surprised when I went back and looked at all the people that had reviewed the document in full. Like, this is very, very well-reviewed document, the syntax document is well-reviewed. The API document isn't necessarily, but only implementers would really look at that document. And I think that argument's going to be fine for Director. And then the formal responses went through and made sure that we checked all the responses, and we have responses back in the affirmative from everyone except for Sandro. Strangely enough, he never said that he was okay with the changes, considering that one of them was his idea and the other one is something that he agreed to multiple times and. Over the call, I don't think that's going to be an issue at all. I think we're good for the transition call. Anything else that you guys can think of that might be problematic for the transition call? All right, moving on. Let's see. Next up is testing API options. Greg, you had sent an email out to the mailing list. You've been working on the test suite. Thank you very much for doing that. You are playing around with the ways of passing things to the test suite, and there has been some discussion on the mailing list, which regretfully I have not been able to keep up with. Greg, would you mind giving a quick overview of where we are with at least encoding the API options for each one of these tests?
So the API options are done by just adding an option member to each test entry, and then that entry has a value which has its own properties, one basically for each option that we're testing. Or in some cases, I think there's one that indicates that an option should be used, which is the document loader, with some specification which has yet to be created for what the document loader implementation, how it must behave. There was some discussion on how to handle errors, since we had a single error expand manifest, which contained one test entry, basically just sort of as a placeholder. my thought had been that we just fold the error test cases in with the regular test cases for each algorithm. Marcus felt that it would be better to keep error separate, since that simplifies the creation of a test runner. I think I have that right. And I think what we agreed was to create a single error manifest that would be used for errors in all of the algorithms, since almost all of them are for expand. And as it happens, I believe I put in the last test required for all the specified error conditions in the expand algorithm, in addition to the context algorithms last night.
Is that all of the error cases or just the error cases for expand in the context?
There's three algorithms in context that call out specific error cases. There's a test for each of them. There are a number of places that errors are called for in the expand algorithm. All of those know-how tests.
Okay.
There are other algorithms that haven't been touched, including some smaller algorithms that could be invoked during the course of expansion.
So you're saying that we don't have complete test coverage, but it's pretty decent?
We have complete test coverage up to that point. I've just been going through it, and that's as far as I've gotten. Obviously, I welcome anyone else to come in and join me. The other issue which has been up is how the context entry should be treated. And this is pertinent because I corrected this yesterday, a number of context documents which were simply empty documents. They contained an empty object. Now, an empty object, if you retrieve a document with an empty object, that is an error condition. And we obviously didn't intend that those throw error conditions. However, if your interpretation was that the context argument references a context which in a test runner you would open and provide as an object, in this case, to the algorithm, it's not an error. Now, my feeling is that the entries in the manifest they're defined to be of type ID, and they're treated as IRIs, and therefore, if the document were expanded, they would be absolute IRIs. And it's clear to me that the meaning is that IRI is passed as the context, and the algorithm then would open that up. So that left an issue of, well, how then would we test? What would we do if we wanted to test passing a context which was not an IRI but was an object or an array of objects or something like that? So I think Marcus suggested that many of those tests, or all of those tests, probably can be done through the idle test platform. At least to test that the API is correct. So I think that's probably the way to do it. If we did feel a need to do it inline, then my idea was that we would pass an explicit literal value for context with a data type that would allow it to be used that way. But it's probably not ideal. So that's pretty much where we are right now.
Okay, that's fantastic. So I think that's meeting. It sounds like we're in really good shape. With respect to the Web IDL stuff, Dave Longley, is that possible?
I don't know how to hook other things into the harness other than just the test that it has to ensure that the API is what it's supposed to be. I think the way that it would work is we would just create more tests that a test runner would have to know that you would have to run through the appropriate API. I don't know that there's anything in the IDL test harness that would have anything to do with this. In terms of what I've implemented, there's a link in IRC now. If you just go to the bottom of that link, you can see that it's the JSONLD.js is running automated tests that pass the Web IDL test harness from W3C now. That's just running the same tests that run on the JSONLD.org site under test suite/IDL test. But the only thing that tests is to make sure that the object has the appropriate methods and interfaces on it. That's how the IDL test works. It doesn't have any knowledge or information about what the API actually does.
Marcus just provided a link that seems to say that you could add other tests on top of the WebIDL test.
Yeah, WebIDL basically just creates a number of tests, and you can create your own by using, well, those test function, that test function there.
Well, again, this just sort of looks like this link is just telling you how to use their test harness to write arbitrary tests.
Right, that's so, what we're doing, or no?
I guess what I'm saying is all that we would be doing is we would be creating maybe another manifest and just more test files that say only run this if you're using the IDL-based API. There's nothing special that's happening here that has to even go through this harness. That has to go through the IDL thing as far as I can tell.
So you're saying we would just have another like Mocha test suite that would run it against a JavaScript library?
Yeah, well, I'm saying it doesn't matter at all. I'm saying whatever test manifest we create that says you have to run these tests through the API, the test runner is the thing that's going to ensure that you're actually running it through your API. You can use whatever test runner you want.
Well, specifically, you know, this IDL stuff is mainly for the JavaScript implementation, so I'm wondering if it's, you know, if the test should be just JavaScript tests.
Well, this sort of raises another question about reporting on the idle tests, and are the idle tests testing the API, rather the document that the web idle is correct in the document, or are they intended to be used for implementations, in which case they're really only appropriate for JavaScript implementations. That would make it difficult to have to show two conforming implementations.
I do think it is difficult. I mean, the two conforming implementations would just be two different things written in JavaScript. Just really, that's all that this is useful for.
Yeah, so basically what I think we're saying is that it would be useless to do that type of testing. I mean, not useless, but the gain from it is very small because the only thing you're going to be able to do is maybe tease out some kind of minor bug in the objects that you pass into the API calls. It's just not really worth testing that kind of stuff because the likelihood of people getting it wrong is fairly low. It's important to test the algorithms, what you're feeding into the algorithms, you know. If it's misinterpreted, those things are probably going to be some of the first things that are pointed out to the developers of the libraries.
Well, I think it's more like we just need to ensure that we're testing API options, and people might write their APIs that don't use idle in the same way, but we need to test that their APIs are doing the right thing based on what the options are in the spec. And it's important to test that. And if we test that all the way through, then, and we have a test for just making sure that it's at least one JavaScript implementation matches what the IDL says, then I think that we're testing everything all the way through.
Wait, so we already have that, don't we?
We already have the JavaScript test, yes. But we don't have tests for the API options. But the point is we should test that people implement what the API options do, but they might not necessarily use the IDL API for their library, but they probably will be using the options.
Yeah, but the thing we were talking about adding to the idle test was to pass in, you know, a context document or a context definition. So that's clearly just related to the API. All the other options are also related to the algorithms itself. So the options, we add them to the normal test manifests. But my proposal was to add that single test or maybe two tests or something to that idle test to just, well, keep it simpler.
Where are we going to put that information? I mean, don't we still want to include that in the other manifests? And I didn't really understand how we were avoiding the issue of having to inline contexts or interpret the context parameters in a different way. If we were just, I didn't really understand what we were gaining or how we were avoiding that problem. If we're going to be testing things where you need to support inline contexts.
Well, we'd also potentially then need to support inline input documents, since since the API allows for that.
Right.
my suggestion was that we use a literal form for the value, and with a data type that indicates that it's serialized JSON or something like that.
I mean, we could do.
Well, in my opinion, if we test it once, that's enough for the API, and the algorithm just needs to handle the input it receives. And how it is passed in isn't really of interest for the algorithm, but whether you can pass in a context document or also a context definition to the API is, in my opinion, clearly related to the API and not to the algorithms. And so my proposal was to add that single test there, and then in the normal test manifest, we don't really care how the tests are run, whether you dereference them on the fly or whether you pass in the already parsed JSON or whatever.
So are we saying that we want to have a single test for passing things in line using literal form, like Greg said, or what are we proposing that we're going to do?
Well, we had that feature or that discussion whether you have to pass in a context document, so an object with an add context key to the API, or whether you can pass in directly context definition for the value of that add context key. And we could add, for example, a test to the idle test, which does both and checks whether the result is the same, for example.
So when you're saying add that to, I'm trying to figure out what add that to the IDL test means. Are you talking about updating that page on jsonly.org? I'm not quite sure what you're saying.
Yeah, updating that page, yeah.
I mean, we can always just update that page. That's fine, but it, and I guess we're not that concerned with other people trying to implement the IDL interface.
Well, I don't know why we are even spending a lot of time on it, given that unless we expect there's another JavaScript implementation to come along, we're not going to be able to show multiple implementations.
It all feels very strange to me.
Here's in the magical world where WebIDL actually applied to other languages other than JavaScript, we could have somebody come along with Java implementation that was IDL compliant or a Python implementation that was IDL compliant, and they could show two interoperable implementations. And in that case, what we would have to do is what Greg, you know, suggested. But I don't think any one of us really cares that much about this being like a serious interoperability issue. Like, we don't. If there's a problem with interoperability, people will complain and people will modify their API. Like, it's not a big deal. If there's no interoperability at this level, it's really not a big deal. Mainly because people just implement the WebIDL in JavaScript and they're done with it. They don't try and implement it in Java or Python. So I think that the arguments for exiting CR should be, there is only really going to ever be one implementation of this stuff in JavaScript. If there are two implementations and developers find it very disturbing that they can't pass the same options to each one of the APIs, then they're going to complain and the APIs are going to change. It's fairly clear what the inputs are supposed to be in the spec. It's not something that we think is that important to test.
Well, is there going to be an argument that they need to see a C++ implementation of this in a browser that indicates that the API works properly in a browser? That could be a second implementation. Ultimately, that's what the implementations are going to be when there's native support.
Well, I mean, I think we could say, well, in one way, we don't know if there's ever going to be native support for JSON-LD in the browser because it's not required. There's nothing that it really buys you.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is we need to be careful, maybe, in what we say for the exit criteria for CR, maybe for this area, so that we don't get stuck in this spot where we now have to write a C++ implementation of this and get it into a browser
because somebody wants
us to do that.
Don't worry. We will push back really hard. If the W3C has never asked for that. They understand that the Web IDL stuff is mainly for JavaScript implementations and browser implementations. So I don't think it has never been a requirement that I think we're worrying about this too much. We really don't need to worry about the Web IDL having like two interoperable JavaScript implementations. It's just not a, you know, the spec is fairly clear on this. The test suite does not have to cover 100% of everything. We really don't think that developers are going to get this wrong. And if they do, all of us can come in and say, hey, you're doing it wrong. Look at the spec. This is how you're supposed to do it. And if they still go off and implement it in a different way, then we end up changing the API in JSON-LD, you know, 1.1 or 2.0. So I think we're spending a lot of time on something that's not going to be an issue at this point. Is there any...
Well, then the simplest thing is to just not test it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a major feature, so we could also just leave that test out.
Yeah.
Right, and we have a minimum test right now that the interface works with the JavaScript implementation. You know,
I think we're already going to show up.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to show up with more tests than any other spec that I've been involved with.
Yeah, I mean we've really like we go overboard. At least this group of folks that have been working on RDFA and JSON-LD, we really go overboard on our test suites, and we really do go above and beyond. I mean, mostly thanks to Greg, and of course, you know, Dave, you know, writing the huge chunk of tests in the beginning, and everyone else that has contributed to it. But yeah, I think we're doing a really good job with our test suite, and we don't need to be that worried about it.
Okay.
Okay, so if we're not doing idle tests, then we don't need to worry about trying to get an URL form and a JSON-LD manifest for the idle tests either then.
I have a question. Are there plenty of...
Sorry, go ahead. Actually, let me...
I was going to make one suggestion. Real quick, one suggestion would be we could have a single test that generates a little URL thing that says you pass Web IDL. And I can put that in we can do that, and then it at least shows that we have a JavaScript implementation that passes.
Well, yeah, but then, again, only one implementation would pass that test, and...
Yeah.
That wouldn't.
That's true.
Yeah, let's not do that because then it starts raising, you know, concerns about you only have one implementation. When we have to go through this entire explanation, and it's just not really worth it, I don't think.
Paul. I do have a question about the test. So, and I'm not looking at them, so I can't tell which side is which. Are we going to have tests that support that will test both the native as well as the RDF, more standard RDF types?
Yes.
Okay.
We've added a way to describe those options in the manifest.
Yeah.
What we need to do is create tests that use those options, and we need at least one test for each place that option is called out in the spec.
Okay. Right, yeah, because I think right now we're just using are all of them using native?
They're using the
default.
Should be using the default.
I think native is off by default.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we do go in and test native, there might be some things that are going to be difficult to test that we might have to leave out, like you know doubles. People are going to generate doubles.
Yeah. The doubles are a pain.
That.
Yes.
We've found that doubles are a major pain to test to support on the C# side because you can't use the standard C# double. So, all right, that was my question there.
Okay.
You can't use the standard C# double?
Yeah, because it's not safe as far as because of the rounding. It's not safe to do due to the way that the C# implementation does some of the rounding. I think there's like an IEEE specific type that has to be used.
Okay. That has to be used to get the output that we're getting in the spec that we're specifying in the spec.
Well, just to, in order to be able to support the XML. Was it our XSD double or the XSD type?
Okay.
So.
Yeah. We could consider just changing the value that's being tested so that it is in the range of what's supported by standard double packages.
Well, no, I think that doing it to where we're testing it to support the whatever's in the XSD is the best way of doing it. I mean, because there is a way of doing it. Honestly, we shouldn't be using doubles for anything anyway, because we're doing, well, banking. Thou shalt never use floating point type values ever.
Okay, so this is fine. We don't need to change anything, is what I'm hearing.
Great.
Okay. Greg, have we already discussed some of the testing manifest and vocabulary updates? I think so. I think this whole conversation kind of included that.
I didn't really talk about the vocabulary updates, but that was basically, so I created, since we referenced a vocabulary, it would obviously be good form for linked data to have that vocabulary be defined. So I created a turtle vocabulary document and then a mechanism which translates that into JSON-LD and into RDFA. And as a result, if you go to jsonld.org/test-suite/vocab, you will get the RDF HTML plus RDFA definition. There's an attempt to do some content negotiation to either return the JSON-LD or the turtle based upon the accept type, but it wasn't working for me, and perhaps my whatever I did in the HT access is not adequate. I was using some standard examples for that, but I don't know enough about it. So if someone that's more familiar with Apache configuration could take a look at that, it would be nice to be able to return the JSON-LD and/or turtle versions of that document if requested. But these do define all of the terms we're using in the test manifests. The idea is there are four base test types, positive, negative, syntax, and evaluation tests. And then there are other tests that define specifics for compact, expand, flatten, frame, from RDF to RDF. And then there are definitions for all of the properties that are used. Now, the properties we're using are the RDF versions. So, for instance, in the JSON-LD manifest, you'll see an input property. That's actually an alias for MF action, just to be conform with the standard test manifest used for RDF elsewhere. So this can be processed purely as RDF, in which case we needed some other options that aren't defined in the standard test manifest for base, compact arrays, expand context, option, processing mode, produce generalized RDF, and use native types.
But yeah, okay, so all of that stuff in there, though, you're saying it's defined and I'm looking at the RDFA, HTML plus RDFA thing. It looks great. Is there anything that's missing that, Craig?
Everything we use from a test manifest is defined in here. And some things are defined in here which we're not currently using, but we expect to use as we proceed through testing. One thing that we probably aren't testing for is the processing mode. There is a definition for processing mode. However, we don't expect to override that. The default is JSON-LD 1.0, and we expect that this is the flag which is sent in via the test runner, which puts the processor in a strict RDF 1.0 mode, if it perhaps also implemented some extensions which weren't called for here. So normalization, for instance, probably would not be set to JSON-LD 1.0, would be something else.
Okay. All right. Anything else on the test manifest and vocabulary updates?
I think that's about it.
Okay. Last topic up is the freeze date for the test suite. Do we have one? Do we want to keep it open? Do we want to say the freeze date is when the CR is published? What do we want to do with respect to this?
Well, for Turtle, they felt they needed to freeze it prior to sending out a call for implementations. RDFA, we never really did that. I don't exactly recall how we did the call for implementations, but we were making changes to the manifest. Yeah, I was making changes to the manifest up until a couple of weeks before the recommendation. And the advantage we had there is that we had a test runner which ran on the web and could reach out to processors so we could determine if a change would cause a problem for any processor that was there. Here, as with most other test cases, we rely upon developers to self-report. Personally, I think that we do need to come up with a time when we feel the test suite is ready and tag that as being the state of the test suite when we had a call for implementations. If we needed to make changes because of other problems that were found during that call period, then we could re-tag. But I don't think that necessarily means that we can't change the manifest after that point. It means that when we're reporting, we would be reporting against instead of the default version, against a sort of a tag version of the URI for the test manifest.
Okay, so how about this for a plan? We'll freeze the test suite the day the CR publication is made, and then so that will be the tag, and then we'll ask for implementers to submit implementation reports, and any bugs or issues we find with the test suite we'll fix, and then we can ask implementers to resubmit. But honestly, at this point, I think we just want to freeze the test suite, have tests put in, and unless something really crazy comes up, just keep it frozen for the CR period, don't really update the test suite, and then once we're out of CR, we start finding bugs or interoperability issues, then keep updating the test suite at that point. So the idea here is just freeze it at CR and just try to keep it frozen at CR unless there's some kind of catastrophic problem with the test suite.
Are we expecting that the test URL that we're using is basically jsonld.org/test suite, or is it some other?
I think we just have to say, look, this is the test suite, and just not change it for the CR period, which shouldn't be hard. It's only 3 weeks.
Now the other thing to do would be to copy the test suite into W3C space.
We have to do
and
that
send
anyway.
People there.
We do that anyway. But I don't know if it's that easy for us to do that because the test suite's generated through Ruby, isn't it? It's not. Is it static?
No.
Okay, so it's static.
Test suite is static.
Okay, well, yeah, we could point people at the W3C test suite. really, I think we're, again, I think we might be overthinking this. Let's just not change the test suite. Let's freeze it, and it doesn't matter if they go to the W3C version of the, or the live version on the site. It's just not going to change during the CR period. We'll tag it at the beginning, and then even if it accidentally somebody commits something, we know, you know, what version of it should be shown to people during the CR period.
Well, part of it was that we do say that the base URI for tests is JSON-LD/test suite versus W3C.tr/JSON-LD/test suite or something like that. And that, so for Turtle, it was in something under the TR space, I think. If we want to do that, I guess we would change the instructions so that tests should be run as if that is the test location, which they could actually be run from that location once the test had been published there.
Yeah, I guess the question is, what's the benefit of doing that?
Does that make it more difficult to run the test locally? I mean,
I don't know that it's any different. I mean, if you run it locally.
I was going to say, when it's published at W3C, it's not like you can just git clone that anymore, right?
You can. It's a mercurial repository.
It's there.
Well,
yeah,
no, it's not for Turtle anymore. It's, yeah, the Turtle, Eric decided to remove it from Mercurial when he published it, which made it very difficult to do. Now, I think that was a bad move, but we wouldn't have to do that.
Right.
I'd say we just keep it at jsonld.org. We did, that's what we did for RDFA, and that was just fine.
I would prefer to just keep it.
Okay, great.
That does imply a commitment to keep that jsonld.org going in perpetuity.
Well, I don't think we have any plans to shut it down.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's, I mean, it doesn't take a lot to keep it up and running.
Over infinite time, there's infinite cost.
It's true, but see, over infinite time, there's an infinite amount of money.
There's, that's true too.
So there's no problem.
There's also infinite debt.
Right. Okay, all right, so we'll keep it on jsonld.org, test suite. We won't touch it during the CR period, and we'll just try and keep that website up for as long as possible. Okay. Anything else? So we're going to freeze. We're going to freeze when we go into CR, when the publication happens.
So will we will wait to make an announcement or a call for implementations until that point, or?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. We'll ping Dan Brickley and say, we'll ping like the people that have said that they want some time. But I think, you know, I don't think the test suite is going to change all that much in the next week, is it?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's still a lot of tests that have to be implemented.
Okay. Well,
right? We have no option tests yet, and we still have at least half the error test to go.
Okay. Well, then our deadline for freezing the test suite is at the beginning of the CR period, and whatever tests we have at that point is what we're going to have for the CR period. Okay. Any objections to running the tests like that? And I think we've done a really good job with tests, so I don't think we're over-testing with respect to the way W3C specs are normally tested. Okay. Anything else? If not, we'll end the call. Okay. Thank you, everyone. I think we need to meet next week? I don't think we do. I don't think there's really that much to discuss. So let's go ahead and cancel the telethon for next week. And Greg, Marcus, I'll talk to you guys on the phone call, on the transition phone call next Thursday.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for the call. Have a good week and next week as well. And we'll chat again probably the week after that.
All right.
Thank you. Have a good weekend. For those in the U.S., have a good 3-day holiday.
I just want
yeah,
to
right.
Hello?
Hi, Vikas.
Yes?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing, like the problem that I faced in terms of linking of the particular terms. So I'll ask those queries over email.
Yeah, I send it over email because it's going to be, I mean, you can try it in the IRC channel, try it over email.
Sure.
Really, I think it's going to boil down to you're going to have to make the best call that you think at the time,
sure.
And we'll fix it after the fact, because there's going to be a lot of questions, and we're just not going to be able to respond to them. You're going to just have to do what's best in your judgment, and then we will go back and look at the work you did and make suggestions and keep iterating on it.
Do
a first pass by yourself, and then we'll go back and take a look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Anything else?
Thank you.
No problem.
Just send the data.
Yeah, okay. I'll run it on my machine and send it to you right after the call.
Sure.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, all.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.